I ran my fingertip over the ridges of his shaft, the deep map of blood feeding his engorged cock. A sharp sting struck my skull as he gripped my hair.
Please, for fuck's sake.
It didn't stop me, though. I pushed forward and ran my tongue over his heavy balls, drawing them into my mouth. He let out a hiss, his grip on my hair tightening.
Stop.
He rasped, but when I did, he unraveled his fingers from my hair and pressed his palm to my crown.
Don't stop. Fuck.
I wrapped my lips over the head of his cock, letting my tongue explore the textures along his shaft. A faint smear of lipstick marked the path of my mouth, and I couldn't even imagine what my face must have looked like right then. Flexing my jaw to accommodate his girth, I gave one long, passionate suck. Brows tight, he bit his bottom lip on a growling moan.
Fuck, Lilia. You feel so fucking good.
His praise stoked my senses, while he fed me his cock at a languorously slow pace. About a quarter of the way down, my gag reflex kicked in, and I pushed up higher onto my knees, angling myself to take more of him.
That's it. Take as much as you can. I need to fuck those pouty lips.
Careful not to scrape my teeth over him, I sucked the water from his skin, savoring the flavor as he glided in and out of my mouth with ease.
You'll swallow my cum, yeah?
A delirious edge clung to his voice, and I released him on a pop of suction and nodded. I drew him back in, sucking harder than before. His hands shot out to either side, and a look of pained ecstasy claimed his face as he rammed his length into my mouth with unrestrained fervor. A growl slipped past his clenched teeth, his head thrown back, stretching the wires of tension in his throat. Faster and faster he pumped his thighs, his grunts echoing all around me.
Good fucking girl,
he said in a ragged and strained voice. My whole body jostled with every fevered drive as he plundered with greed. I slid my hands up the back of his muscled thighs to his tight ass and dug my nails into him, feeling him clench with every retreating suck. He moaned and panted, and his thighs shook as I held him to my face.
Show me those beautiful eyes,
he rasped. And when I dragged my gaze to his, he held the back of my head, fucking my mouth with brutal decadence. Over and over, his thighs flexing with every thrust. Drool leaked out of the corners of my lips. His grunts heightened to a mixed sound of pain and pleasure. Not a second later, he swayed, and warm fluids shot to the back of my throat. I coughed and gagged, but never once broke contact with his shaft. I gripped his cock tight, holding it steady as the sound of relief that broke from his chest bounced off the tiles and hot jets filled my mouth, dribbling down my chin. I swallowed it back and licked the head of him again, sucking away the water-drenched cum. The floor scraped across my shins as he yanked me to my feet and slammed me against the tiles. Vexation and intoxication and exhaustion swirled in his eyes like a turbulent storm as he pinned me there, heat rolling off him.
What are you doing to me?
He rested his forehead against my shoulder, his body trembling, chest heaving.
What the fuck are you doing to me, Lilia?
I threaded my fingers through his hair, and he gripped my bottom, lifting me up as I wrapped my legs around his waist. My fingertips ghosted down his neck, where the puckered flesh of his acid scars slipped past. He pushed away, but I clutched him tighter, wrapping my arms around his neck. Don't. Please, I'm sorry. For a moment, he stilled, and then his lips were on mine, his body pressing me into the shower wall.
Why did you come in here? Why do you insist on making it worse?
Making it worse? Or making you want me as much as I want you?
We already agreed. This was only one night.
He wiped away the remnants of lipstick smeared across his mouth.
That's all.
Is it? Do you honestly think everything will just magically go back to the way it was before?
It has to. My work is too important.
I didn't want his words to sting as much as they did. I didn't want to feel like he'd punched me in the chest and I couldn't breathe, but that was exactly how I felt right then. I hated myself for letting him crawl beneath my skin, for allowing my guard to fall, to crumble into a pile of miserable rubble, knowing he would kick the pieces around. Holding back tears, I wriggled to get loose, but his grip tightened. Let me go.
No. Not until I know that you won't say a word of this.
Of course not, Professor. Your reputation is safe with me.
It isn't about that, Lilia. Stop being foolish and emotional. They'll tear you apart to keep me here. Do you understand that? That is what I mean when I say my work is too important. They will make you look like an impoverished whore to spare my good name.
So what? They think that anyway, don't they? Don't you? He didn't answer. Only stood there, silently snarling at whatever thoughts ran through his head. I refused to let myself regret this. No matter what he said, what he did, how it all played out in the end, the fact was he made me feel something extraordinary. Something no one had ever made me feel, even at the risk of pain and longing. I don't care what this was to you. It was still worth it. His eyes softened, and he exhaled a breath, lowering me back to the floor. A gentle hand ran over the top of my head, and he planted a kiss to my forehead.
I don't regret tonight.
He stepped past me and exited the shower. Through the glass, I watched him nab a towel from one of the hooks on the wall and dry off. He wrapped the towel around his waist, and with one more glance back at me, he exited the bathroom, closing the door on a quiet click. Don't cry. Don't you dare cry. It wasn't as if I'd pined after the man, as if I'd sought him out for any reason other than the opportunity to find out more about the organism and, possibly, my mother. I'd planned to use him, too. Didn't that make me just as shitty? I'd survived getting ghosted by the small handful of boys I'd given blowjobs to under school bleachers and in the back seats of rusted-out cars, so this was nothing new for me, right? Except it was. Everything was entirely new. The way he made me feel. The way he gave without asking for anything in return. The way his arms felt around me and the dirty, titillating words he whispered in my ear. It was all new. It was all beautiful, and even if it was fleeting, it was perfect. When I finally exited the shower, he sat leaning against the edge of the fold-out bed, the towel still wrapped around his lower half, cigarette dangling from his fingertips, seemingly mesmerized by the flames. He took a drag of his smoke and tipped his head back, blowing it upward and spared me nothing more than a glance. Towel wrapped around myself, I scampered toward the other side of the bed and sat down on the edge of it. Cracking open chest cavities hasn't turned you off to smoking? I asked, trying to lighten the mood and lessen the awkward silence.
I don't do it frequently. Only when I'm fucking tense or reeling from an intense fuck. And right now I'm both.
I made you tense?
Yes, but it's not your fault. It's mine.
Why is it anyone's fault? He snorted and leaned forward to flick his cigarette into the flame.
No more questions tonight.
Hiking his arm over the edge of the bed, he went back to staring off at the flame, and I settled into the sheets at the opposite side.
You should probably hate me right now,
he said, his voice stained with remorse. I probably should, but I don't. With a mirthless chuckle, he shook his head.
Here, I thought it was the moth who had succumbed to the fire.
Chapter 48, Lilia. I folded the sheet I'd used, draping it over the couch. Due to the dungeon-like office being lit only by the desk lamp, only the chime of the clock alerted me that morning had arrived. Professor Bramwell typed away at his computer. His eyes had been glued to there for most of the morning, aside from the occasional glance my way. He'd helped me fold the couch back and replaced all of the cushions, but not a single word was exchanged between us. Fully dressed, I cleared my throat and turned to face him. Well, I guess I'll see you in class.
I'll see you in class, Miss Vespertine,
he echoed, going back to his typing. The cold, detached tone in his voice stabbed me in the heart, and I blinked back tears as I turned for the door. Stop it, I chided myself. I'd always been harder than this, stronger. I'd had boys from school feeding me their false promises while they stuffed my face with their cocks, but walking away from them had always been easy, because they'd taken without giving. They took selfishly and made a sport of their conquests. I'd never climaxed with one of them, never felt their skin against mine or watched them fall to their knees to pleasure me first. As much as I tried to convince myself otherwise, Bramwell was different. Exceptional. And that made it hurt worse.
Lilia, wait.
I refused to turn around and let him see the torment on my face, the way his actions affected me so profoundly. I wished I could tear all of the emotion out of me, the way he so easily had. At the sound of footsteps, my head urged me to bolt for the door. Don't be childish.
Turn around.
The command in his voice told me he'd gladly spin me around himself if I failed to comply. So I turned to find him standing there, hands casually tucked in his pockets.
I won't soon forget last night. Tell me you understand how much it meant that you were here for my first success.
His words slashed across my heart like a poison-tipped blade. His first success. Was he so clueless that he couldn't understand that last night was more than that for me? That he'd turned my entire world upside down in just a matter of hours? That what we'd done had seared itself into my memory forever, and no matter how many boys I'd been with before or men I ended up with after today, he would always be my true first? I understand. His jaw shifted, and he turned as if he might go back to his desk, but paused mid-stride. Without warning, he prowled toward me, grabbed me by the back of my neck, and dragged me to his lips. His kiss was cruel and blistering, his hands like barbed wire across my skin, and I wanted to push him away and tell him how much I fucking hated his stupid games, that I hated the push and pull and cat and mouse. Tell him, Lilia, make him hurt too. But I couldn't, because the unsettling truth of it was, it set me alight. I really was a dumb fucking moth. I melted into the commotion, and when he pulled me in tighter and clamped onto my neck, I let go. Floated on big, fluffy clouds of ignorant and unrequited bliss. It was easier that way, to slip into stupidity and pretend his kiss meant anything to me. The masochist reared her ugly head, swallowing his attention like a lovesick fool. Because even if I knew better, even if I knew it was all a lie, it felt fucking good. He pulled away, and for the first time since the night before, I saw a flicker of pain in his eyes. Good. I wanted to frame it, study it, just to know that I'd left something inside of him, too, that he could still feel me crawling over his skin. Eyes locked on his, I reached up the hem of my skirt and pulled down my panties, slipping them over my ankles. I balled them in my palm and stuffed them into the pocket of his slacks, next to the hard length that brushed the edge of my thumb. "Panties are for the modest," I said, and turned for the door.
Chapter 49, Devrick. Fuck. I paced my office, running my hands through my hair. Hours had passed since Lilia left. Hours I'd sat at my desk, trying to focus on something that wasn't my tongue and her pussy. It was futile. She'd crawled beneath me, inside of me, infecting me with the kind of drunken lust that had me pausing to fuck my own hand every hour. My rejection toward her hadn't been personal. I was affiliated with too many corrupt and dangerous individuals, those who would love to know that I'd all but fucked my student, not just for the scandal, but to have something weighty to hold over me. As it was, they had nothing. I had nothing. I was a rogue, completely detached from anything meaningful enough to reel me in. And that was exactly how I wanted it to stay. Unfortunately, Lilia was fucking up my head in that respect. Palms pressed to the desktop, I stared at the half-written report on my computer screen. The same sentence I'd written a dozen times over in a failed attempt to concentrate. An unbridled flame blazed through me, burning with the urge to pull her out of whatever class she was in right then and fuck her brains out. Part of it was the toxin that invariably affected my sex drive. The other part was the fact that she'd done something to me no other woman before her had accomplished. She'd actually made me feel. Not just mentally, but physically. Every nerve in my body hummed with the memory of her soft skin, the curves and edges and textures and flaws that made me crave an entire night of touching and exploring. those defiant eyes that matched the fire of her hair, and that smart mouth that had not only mastered the words to get my blood boiling, but also the sheer, incontestable art of sucking cock. She was a sorceress. She had to be. What else could possibly explain the toxic poison running through me right then? The inability to go 10 minutes without thinking about her, either sexually or longingly. My body mourned her. Had spent the last few hours punishing me for letting her walk out of my office like that, without panties. I imagined a breeze catching the hem of her skirt, lifting it from the pretty little ass beneath. Focus, please. Fucking focus. The sooner I handed the report over to Lippincott, the more time I could buy. After all, the toxin wasn't perfect. I'd still had a few jitters and the inability to control my body temperature. It also gave the feeling of crawling skin, which I'd noticed more profoundly when Lilia had left. And the sex drive. The endless appetite to stick my dick in something was probably the worst of it. Not something. Someone. Her. The fact that she was entirely forbidden only made me want her more, and the hell of it all was, I held the power to either ruin or change her life. She was precisely the kind of woman for whom I'd easily cast aside whatever pathetic morals still smoldered inside my conscience, one whose drive and passion wasn't tainted by power and money. So hungry to learn, and I longed to be the one to feed her every spoonful of depravity she craved. I pulled the panties out of my pocket for the dozenth time and breathed in that sweet, infuriating scent that left me intoxicated. Like every other time, a rush of blood shot straight to my dick at the same time that pain struck my groin. Furious, I fell into my seat, unlatching my belt as I had done so many times before, rubbing myself raw to feed that insatiable monster that clawed at my insides, desperate and hungry. Is this what you want? Will you let me fucking work if I do this? I had class in an hour, would have to see her there, knowing I couldn't touch her, or smell her, or feel her. The misery of that gnawed at my bones. I'd faced Gilchrist a number of times after having actually fucked her and felt nothing. Not a single twitch of my dick, or desire to have her again. Lilia was different. She made me physically feel things I hadn't felt in a long time. A feat I didn't think was possible, even with my senses having returned. Beyond the superficial caresses of every other woman I'd known, Lilia's touch had branded itself into my flesh and blood, and now it was all I craved. She was the warmth of the sun on a cold and rotting corpse, the first breath after a lifetime of death. How could I share an entire campus with her, knowing she could fall in love at any moment with some inexperienced cad who wouldn't have a clue what to do with a girl like her? The very thought sprouted cruel and vile schemes, like keeping her in one of the cells below, caging her like one of my little moths. Another swell of pain throbbed deep in my groin, as the visual of her tied and bound danced through my head like dangerous little pixies. I stroked myself fast and hard, punishing my flesh as I beat out those obsessive urges. But like the monster inside of me, they took root and bloomed into a full-on fantasy I couldn't shake from my mind. My sweet, decadent Lilia laid out before me like a delicious meal. I held her panties to my face, breathing her into me as I imagined burying my dick inside her. Those beautiful, suckable tits bouncing in my face, a look of pain and pleasure written in her expression, and the disarming sound of her silky moans that echoed in my head like mine grenades. Lilia. Her name was a dirty scalpel plunged deep inside my chest, past crumbling bones and decayed flesh. It pierced the only organ I vowed could never be touched again and infected me with insufferable greed. I wanted the pain of it, the impossibility, the absolute rapture of claiming her for myself, and therein hid the tragic reality of just how tempting she'd become. If fucking her meant an eternity in hell, I'd welcome damnation with a goddamn smile. My body hardened as climax hooked itself deep inside me, and I called out her name as ribbons of cum sprang from the head of my dick onto my hand. Spent and weak, I reach for the same towel that had captured every other ejaculation, wiping my slick hand on wet spots from before. I couldn't deny. Every one of them had left me shuddering with satisfaction, but I was in desperate need of accomplishing something other than soaking a fucking towel with cum. Rubbing my clean hand down my face, I let out a relieved breath and took in the flaccid state of my cock. As I leaned forward to pick up where I'd left off in my report, a memory of Lilia knelt before me slipped through my head. No! 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 Blood surged to my cock, my muscles hardening with new arousal, and I looked down in horror to see the insatiable beast standing at attention again. What the fuck? I couldn't tell if it was the toxin or a fiery redhead who'd managed to mindfuck me before she left. Fumbling to stuff it back into my pants, I shot up from my desk. No more. Still battling a massive hard-on, I knocked on the door to Gilchrist's office. At her acknowledgement, I entered the office, one hand in my pocket, where I subtly pushed the record button on my phone.
Deverick, what a pleasant surprise. Have a seat.
She gestured toward one of the chairs, and her gaze lingered at my groin. The hell of it was, she probably thought it was for her. I understand you accuse one of my students of cheating, and gave her a shit grade with some petty bullshit notes. Peeling her gaze from my dick, she scoffed.
I beg your pardon. Is that what you came in here for? To defend your student?
When I didn't bother to answer that, she rolled her shoulders back.
She happens to be my student as well, and she failed to produce coherent responses to the essay questions.
I read her responses, and they were not only coherent, but accurate. As for the cheating accusation, you and I both know Miss Vespertine would have more success cheating off a dead possum than Spencer Lippincott.
Spencer happens to be a very good...
I've little time, I said, cutting her off, my dick growing more flaccid by the second. So, let's just get to the root of what this is. I rejected you. You're angry. Incredulity flickered in her eyes as she shifted with obvious discomfort.
How dare you inject yourself into this matter?
You're not angry at me. Her gaze flicked to mine, and she opened her mouth as if to speak, shifting again.
Well, of course I am. I'm hurt.
And you're taking it out on a student who doesn't deserve your wrath.
I see the two of you. It's a strange relationship.
You see through jealous eyes, I said flatly. There is no relationship between Miss Vespertine and me. Even I was impressed at how easily the lie tumbled free. There was something between us. I just didn't know what the fuck it was. Stop using her as an emotional punching bag. She tapped an unmanicured finger against the desktop, staring back at what must have been a look of absolute apathy written all over my face.
Fine. Although I stand by my original assessment and observations, for your sake, I will revisit Miss Vespertine's test score and drop the accusation on one condition.
I waited with not-so-bated breath for her to say it.
Have dinner with me.
Bingo. Exactly what I was looking for. No.
No?
She scoffed a laugh.
Then do yourself a favor, Deverick, and stay out of matters that don't concern you, or I'll have other accusations besides cheating to report.
Brow raised, she crossed her arms.
Like your strange interactions with Miss Vespertine.
I would invite administration to reach out to Miss Vespertine and inquire of any inappropriate behavior. My interactions with her have been nothing less than honorable and professional. My soul damn near withered with that one.
Perhaps. But who would believe the man previously accused of such behavior?
Likewise, who would believe that a respected professor would choose to dole out shitty grades based on jealousy? I lifted my phone from my pocket to show that it continued to record and pressed stop, holding back a laugh when her eyes damn near bulged out of their sockets. Don't fuck with me, Loretta. And stay out of my business, or I'll see to it that every member of administration and my lawyer receive a copy of this.
Chapter 50. Lilia. He refused to look at me, Clad in dark jeans and a white button-down, Professor Bramwell stood at the front of the lecture hall, describing chemotactic behavior in Leishmania, a topic I suddenly didn't care about, not sparing me a single glance. I would have been frustrated by that, if he hadn't rubbed the back of his neck a few times, rubbed his jaw, and even loosened a button on his shirt at some point, which didn't go unnoticed by the girl sitting in front of me. She snapped a picture of him with the caption, "Yes, Daddy Death," and had zoomed in on the front of his pants to the obvious outline of a bulging hard-on. I shifted in my seat, the impudent brat in me wanting to kick the back of hers. Hard. Not like it was her fault, though, when the man oozed sex and raw masculinity out of every pore of his body. The mere sight of him spurred visuals of sweat and muscle, moving like a well-honed machine. I flinched at that, turning away to relieve myself of the gnawing thought that had me crossing my legs. Damn him. As I left the lecture hall, rolling my eyes at the lineup of girls waiting to ask a million questions just to get a few moments of his attention, I caught the focused trail of his gaze that followed after me. That was how it was going to be from then on. Stolen glances and awkward silences. I hated it, this dynamic between us. It had only been mere hours, and my skin already missed the feel of his rough hands, the soft caress of his lips. For the rest of my day, I went through mindless motions, muscle memory, unpacking my laptop, taking my notes, packing it back up, heading to the next class, eating. All the while, my head was wound around Professor Bramwell and what we'd done the night before. In a long, hot shower, I pressed my forehead to the tiles and desperately tried to recreate those sensations with my own fingers. Not even the tickle of the water, the heat, or the slickness of my body could replicate the belly-curling thrill he'd stirred with his mouth, like a hungry, starving beast that would never be full. Everything after him would be mediocre. He was right. He had absolutely ruined me. Torn me open to my darkest secrets, which he shifted and molded to fit himself there, and sewn me back together as something else entirely. I didn't even recognize the pining fool I'd become. As I stared at myself in the foggy bathroom mirror, I shook my head. "What the hell are you doing?" I whispered. I had to get over it. Over him. It was one night. A night I'd never forget. And nothing more. Chapter 51. Lilia. I needed to clear my head. Running had always been a source of stress relief for me, and since I couldn't sleep, I decided a jog around campus might unkink the tangle of thoughts in my head. Clad in my Dracadia sweatshirt and a pair of black shorts, I grabbed my pepper spray and headed out into the dimly lit early morning. Dawn wasn't for another 45 minutes, and a peaceful calm blanketed the campus. It had been a few weeks since I'd last gone for a run, and it felt good to work those muscles that had gone soft with my insanely busy schedule. At the beginning of the semester, I'd acquainted myself with Devrick's running schedule. According to what I'd observed, he wouldn't be setting out for another hour, which meant I was probably safe not to run into him. And earbuds in, I took the path along the dorms, where a few other joggers waved as I passed. Athletes, most of them, given the Dracadia warm-up garb I'd seen them wear on the field while practicing. My playlist was a wild mix of rap and alternative, with the occasional pop song thrown in. Unbidden memories of my night with Professor Bramwell arrived in erratic flashes, though. The intense stare, his hands on me, his face between my legs. Running shoes pounding the concrete, I kicked up my pace, my ponytail whipping around my face. I dashed around the Rawlings academic wing and up the small hill toward the Sigma Pi house, as if those thoughts chased after me. More images poured in. His lips on mine, fist threaded in my hair, his palm cuffing my throat. Mist blew from my mouth as my pulse ramped up and I pushed more speed from my legs. Fingers inside of me, dirty whispered words, filthy thoughts, teeth grazing my jaw. I ran even harder, my breaths becoming erratic, my heart hammering in my chest. I was no longer jogging, but sprinting across the campus, my muscles growing weak with the exertion. The cool air thickened in my lungs, and I ground down my pace to a brisk walk, heaving for breath. Eyes clenched, I willed myself to banish the visuals of him, because, for fuck's sake, I knew it couldn't work. He was my professor. He had the power to affect my grade and maybe even my scholarship. I couldn't afford to lose that. I couldn't afford to leave Dracadia. Tugging one of my earbuds out, I paused, resting my palms on the tops of my thighs, and breathed. Once sufficiently oxygenated, I stood up, preparing for another circuit around campus, when in the distance I saw Professor Bramwell round the corner of Prythor Hall, wearing his gray sweatpants and the black muscle shirt that emphasized his brawny arms. Oh, shit. A glance down at my watch showed I still had another 30 minutes before he typically headed out for his run. What the hell? Spinning on my heel, I darted ahead of him. To my utter horror, he caught up to me, coming alongside me. He pulled one of the black earbuds from his ear.
What are you doing, Miss Vespertine?
What does it look like? I sprinted ahead of him, my face burning with humiliation. Jesus, the guy probably thought I was trying to stalk him or something. Once again, he caught up to me and grabbed my arm, bringing both of us to a slow halt.
It's fucking dark out,
he said, his furious voice only mildly affected by the run.
You shouldn't be running by yourself.
I was trying to avoid running into you, Mr. Joggs, at precisely the same time every morning except today.
I have an important board meeting later and had to bump my run, so you put yourself at risk to avoid running into me?
You won't even look at me. Now you suddenly care? Shaking my head, I turned in the direction of my dorm, but felt a tight grip of my arm.
What do you want, Lilia? Want me to proclaim my attraction and fuck you in front of the student body and administration? To let everyone know that I'm so bitterly obsessed with you, I've rubbed my dick raw since you left? Maybe I should apologize to the board this afternoon for a half-assed report, because my student's pussy was all I could think about when I was writing it.
He ran his hands through his hair, pacing in front of me.
No, I can't look at you right now because I'm crawling out of my skin wanting to touch you.
A look of disgust claimed his face as he gestured toward my legs.
And if you think for 1 second I'm letting you jog around here in the dark in those tiny fucking shorts, looking like a midnight snack, you've grossly underestimated just how much of a prick I can be.
I didn't know what to say to that. I was literally speechless, standing there watching him pace with anger and frustration. Because of me. Because of what we did. I'm sorry. I haven't stopped thinking about you either. 2 joggers approached, and he cleared his throat, turning away as if to put some distance between us as they passed through. Once they disappeared over the hill, he turned back to face me and dragged a hand down his face.
Let's just call it what it was. 1 amazing night. 1 I hope you remember with the same relentless longing, an anger, an ache that I feel every time I look at you. It fucking hurts to know that I can't have you, Lilia. I lose in that respect. But that is the tragic reality in all of this. What we did that night cannot be repeated. Understand?
Yes, I understand. As much as it troubled me, I understood. He gave a quick nod, ushered me back onto the path and trailed after me, watching me as he jogged at a distance behind me. Instead of taking another circuit around campus, I headed straight for my dorm. A text popped up from Jada. Say hello to Henry Michael Fuller. A picture followed of a small little bundle held in the crook of an arm. As much as it hurt to smile right then, I texted back. OMG, he's perfect. How are you feeling? Exhausted. This baby eats every hour. Got my boobs feeling like 2 boulders hanging off a toothpick. Sounds painful. You have no idea. But I don't want to talk about motherhood right now. Whisk me away to academia. What's going on with you? I bit my lip, debating whether or not to tell her about Bramwell. It wasn't like she knew him or would ever meet him. I think I screwed up. How? My mind spun with how to frame the answer. Did you fuck your professor? Leave it to Jada. Define fuck. On second thought, don't. I hooked up with him, but we didn't get that far. Hang on, this isn't a conversation for text. Not a minute later, my phone rang and I answered it. Oh, Lilia. She spoke low, obviously not wanting to wake the baby. I know, it's bad. Was it, though? Or was it fucking good? Screwing my eyes shut, I let out a pained sigh, and at a flash of his head between my thighs, I willed the thought away. Is he hot? Does he have a big dick? She whispered through the phone. Come on, I need details. Really? I have 5 more goddamn weeks before I can get dicked again. I'm living vicariously through you right now, please. I groaned, trying to hold back a smile. Yes and yes. She made a noise of excitement, quickly followed by a broken shh, shh, like she was bouncing the baby. A moment of quiet, and she whispered, Where did all this nastiness go down? His office? Yes. Are you guys a secret, forbidden thing now? We're not anything. I hated the bitter taste of disappointment on my tongue from saying that aloud. It was only weeks ago that I'd sworn off all men, determined to focus on my studies, and there I was, pining after my moody professor. Does he have a history of hooking up? No, I've never seen him so much as look at another student. The insensitive chuckle that followed left me frowning. What's funny about that? He is not over you, Lilia. Trust me. The baby cried in the background. Shit, I gotta go. Hungry again. Make sure you send me a pic. I don't have a pic. Get one. She didn't even wait for me to argue before the phone clicked. I arrived at his lab that evening, dressed in something a bit more conservative after the conversation with him earlier that morning. A sweater and jeans that scratched at my legs. Every brush of our hands, and he flinched. Every stare, and he looked away, scowling. It was as if he'd grown angrier at me since our last encounter. While on the way to sterilize Augur in the autoclave, I paused alongside the glass dome, noticing Achilles and Patroclus vigorously flapping their wings, their ends attached to one another. Mating. Achilles broke loose and almost looked like he stumbled away before Patroclus returned again, wings flapping so fast and frantically I could hear a soft hum through the glass. Jesus, I muttered. Somebody's horny. As I hung up my lab coat in the autopsy room, Professor Bramwell pushed through the door, a look of sheer misery screwing up his face.
Lilia.
He exhaled hard through his nose, like even the sound of my name brought him grief.
This arrangement is no longer workable.
My heart withered like a deflating balloon. What? What do you mean?
I mean, I'm going to have to let you go. I'll put in a word with Dr. Friedman to have you work in his microlab. If you'd like the
I don't want to work with Dr. Friedman. I want to work here, with you, on this project. It's important to me. I searched his eyes for humor, or even the slightest bit of doubt, but found nothing but a steely resolve burning there.
It's not going to work.
Why? Because of what happened between us? He winced as if the mere mention of it wounded him. I need this job. I need the cash. Please, I'm begging you. God, I sounded like Gilchrist.
This is my fault. I should have stayed away. It was on me to stay away, and I didn't. And now?
A muscle in his jaw twitched with the clenching of his teeth.
It's just not going to work.
My sister. She's going to be kicked out of school. I'm begging you, Devrick. Nothing has to happen between us. I get it. It was irresponsible of me, too. Reckless. I shouldn't have pushed. Please. Please let me stay. I don't know what I'll do. He handed me an envelope, presumably a check for the wages I'd earned for the measly few days I'd worked.
Go, Lilia. And do not come back tomorrow.
Please, Devrick. The pathetic tone in my voice sickened me. How quickly I'd shifted from feeling in control to feeling completely helpless. And I hated that this man held the reins, that no matter what, he would always be in control because that was the dynamic of professor and student. He didn't have to have a good reason to kick me out of his lab. He'd let me in on a bribe, and now he was trying to dissolve the arrangement like a bad case of heartburn. Please don't do this. As he turned to leave, I fought tears. The options for making up the extra cash had just slipped from my fingers like water. Jobs on campus paid half of what I'd have earned working for him. My cheeks heated with the shame I swore I wouldn't allow myself to feel. The realization that my sister would be kicked out of the one place she felt safe and thrown into whatever hell awaited her back at Connors because I'd had a reckless moment with my professor. It was my fault. All of it. The bus pulled up to my dorm and I climbed out, my body weak and exhausted with stress. I made my way through the commons area where students laughed and watched TV, up to the third floor. Once inside, I pressed my back into the door to close it and slid to the floor. Tears finally broke free. On the ride home, I'd contemplated logging back into the porn site just to claim the money I'd been too scared to collect, fearing that my video would have shown back up on the site. Did dignity matter at that point? I had $10 in my account. The coins I'd earned would have given me another few hundred, almost 1,000, if memory served me right. I unsealed the envelope from Devrick and pulled out the check from inside. $5,000. A personal check made out to cash. My throat constricted, the air trapped in my lungs, and I was glad to be sitting on the floor right then because I probably would have passed out. 5,000. I double-blinked, wondering if my eyes were playing tricks. The amount was written out in mostly illegible writing, but I could definitely make out 1,000, not 100. $5,000. I'd never had so much at once in my entire life. It had cover all of her tuition until Christmas, including Connor's share, so even if I had to get a job paying $100 a week, I'd have enough to be 2 months ahead by then. Stop, I chided. Stop right now. As much as I wanted to slip into the excitement of it all, the weight of reality pressed down on me. I couldn't accept this from him. While it was a noble gesture, it'd be wrong for me to take the money. I hadn't earned it, which brought to mind another thought. Was this his way of paying me off to keep my silence? That would have hurt even worse. Part of me wanted to storm back to the lab, to his office, and throw the check in his face like a strong, independent woman with scruples would have done. The other part of me decided to sleep on it. Perhaps I could come up with an arrangement to pay him back. Who was I kidding? It'd take a decade or more for that amount. Perhaps in sleep I'd formulate some kind of plan to make it work, because I sure as hell didn't want to do something rash and emotional, like throwing it back in his face when I really needed it. Chapter 52. Lilia. 2 days passed. My knee bounced incessantly as I sat in midnight lab waiting to see if Professor Bramwell would show. He hadn't been in lecture that morning, or the last scheduled lecture, leaving Ross to lead in his absence. I nibbled on my lips, my anxiety blossoming as students filed in and took their seats. The check remained tucked away in my trinket box, hidden beneath my bed. I refused to cash it until I at least talked to Bramwell. Unfortunately, I hadn't come up with much of a plan to pay him back that wouldn't continue to put me behind with B. The nagging possibility that the money might have been a payoff chewed at my thoughts. And again, the stubborn fool in me wanted to throw it in his face and tell him to fuck off. That was the shitty thing about being broke, though. Pride was an ever-fading ideal. Spencer hustled to his bench, his eyes rimmed in dark circles as if he hadn't slept in days. It was the first time I'd seen him since that day in the alley after class. The guy looked like he'd gone on a bender or something. Ross stood at the front of the class, unpacking his notes, and the sliver of hope I'd had for seeing Devrick shriveled. For 2 days, I'd convinced myself it was wrong, that I didn't deserve the cash, that the right thing to do was return the check politely and thank him for his kindness. And then I'd imagined his response, him calling me a fool and throwing out insults to anger me into cashing it. Where was he? I needed to talk to him. Just as I prepared to settle in for another disappointing lecture, the devil himself strode through the door. And damn my heart for galloping in my chest at the sight of him. Decked out in jeans and a black shirt, he swept through the lab, looking better than he had any right to look. His skin glowed, eyes lacking the dark circles he always wore. He looked good. Too freaking good. He stopped at the tank beside my bench, where all of the larvae germinated on their beloved Knoxberries, and with his trusty forceps, he plucked berries and deposited them into a specimen jar. Say something. My lips dried at the thought of grabbing his attention in a full class. Professor? The meek tone of my voice hardly carried, and my cheeks reddened with the possibility that I'd have to call out to him again.
Yes, Miss Vespertine.
He didn't bother to turn around, but kept to the task of gathering the larvae. Of course the class had quieted then. Of course they had. May I speak with you for a moment?
Regarding?
Are you kidding me? I should have been bold and told him I wanted to speak with him about the check he'd written me. That would have pissed him off, though. It's about my grade. I lied.
I have office hours available to discuss such matters, Miss Vespertine. I would invite you to schedule a time that works best for you.
I hated this. I hated that we'd reversed time into this weird dynamic that was worse than before. It's urgent, though. I'd really like just a few minutes of your time.
I'm afraid that's not possible right now. I'm very busy.
Had we not been in a classroom full of other students, I'd have called him by his name, snapped him out of the cold, aloof front he was putting on. Ross finally began his lecture, a lively topic on mind control that garnered some engagement from other students. Would you happen to have any openings tomorrow? My voice hardly carried over the rumble of voices as students held quiet discussions.
I'm afraid I'm booked all week.
Purple light streamed through the glass jar as he held it up, examining the cluster of berries inside.
You might find an available slot next week.
Booked? With what? His fangirls who showed up with lists of questions just to flirt with him? Fine. I wanted to scream. It's fine. I'm sure I can get a private appointment with Ross. At that, he finally turned around with an absolutely murderous look carved into his expression.
Tomorrow, Miss Vespertine. After lecture.
The snippy edge of anger in his tone told me what the man would never admit to my face. He was jealous. And damn it, the thought of that made my twisted little heart sing. As I left the midnight lab, I caught sight of a light in one of the other labs across the hall, where Bryson sat at a bench, furiously typing away at his computer. Curious, I abandoned the group heading toward the bus and entered the room, which was empty for all but him. Hey. He glanced up from his computer and smiled.
Hey, what's up?
Burning the midnight oil in here, or what?
Yeah, I have a research project due tomorrow.
Oh, I probably shouldn't bother you then.
No, it's okay. I could use a break.
He gestured to one of the stools across from him. I'd have to walk back to my dorm, but it wouldn't have been the first time I'd done that. Now that I knew the man in the bird mask had been nothing more than a hallucination, I hadn't seen him as much. That, or I'd just stopped looking for him. So what's the topic? I asked, peeking at his notes on the bench.
I'm actually really excited about this. So you're familiar with BlackRock, right?
Like the stuff they sell at the apothecary stores in town? Yeah.
Well, the chemistry department is actually working on cataloging a newly discovered metal found in the rock called Castillon.
Wow. I thought this rock was pretty difficult to find. One of the locals told me it's dangerous to harvest.
It's definitely not as abundant as it once was. Centuries ago, the basin became unstable, forming a huge rift, and part of the island sank into the ocean.
He said with a gesture of his hands, the excitement for his project pouring into his explanation, and it made me think of Bramwell.
It's how he ended up with Bone Bay.
Bryson prattled.
The rock split away and now makes up one of the deepest drop-offs around Dracadia. It's pretty creepy, actually. The shallows are about 5 feet deep, and then, boom, a quarter mile vertical drop. That's where you'll find the most concentrated black rock, inside the underwater caves, but it's all over Bone Bay and the gravel on shore. That's how we found it, actually, in the gizzards of seagulls and ravens that eat the small stones.
I knew from taking care of my mother's birds that they didn't have teeth and used the small stones, gastroliths as they were called, to mill the food during digestion. It brought to mind a sketch I'd seen in one of the books I'd read on the history of the island. The skull with the black stone teeth, belonging to a member of the Kuunachki tribe. Could it have been the same stone? That's fascinating. A whole new metal? Isn't that going to change the whole periodic table?
Well, yeah. We have to confirm that it is in fact new and meets the criteria for discovery, then submit to the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry. It's pretty cool, though. I just need to get my shit together on this paper, but I think I'm going to call it quits for the night. Can I walk you back to your dorm?
You don't have to do that.
I insist. It's not Covington here, but you still have to be careful. Better to walk in twos.
And what happens when you have to walk back alone? He snorted a laugh and shrugged.
My dorm isn't far from yours. There's one camera and an emergency station. All lights.
Then how about we walk each other to that point and split off there?
I don't think so. I offered to walk you, so I'm walking you.
Well, if you insist. I waited for him to pack up his laptop and scattered notes, and the two of us headed out of Emmerich Hall together. Can I ask you something that's been bothering me?
Sure.
What was the relationship between Jenny Herrick and Mel? I mean, as far as I know, Jenny dated Spencer's best friend, right? The drop in temperatures had my skin pebbling as we cut across the courtyard.
Admittedly, I don't know a whole lot outside of Mel's perspective, but yes. I guess Mel agreed to a couple dates with Spencer. Up until he, well, you know.
Strange that he didn't want to say it aloud. Do you think it was Spencer's father who let him off the hook? Seems drugging a student would be cause for expulsion.
Could have been, if we assume Mel is telling the truth.
I already knew she'd told the truth after my conversation with Spencer, but it was interesting that he questioned it.
It was actually Professor Gilchrist who backed his story.
What? The visual of her cupping his groin flashed through my head again.
Yeah. She claimed that she had been tutoring him at about the time Mel would have been drugged. She claimed the same thing when Jenny went missing.
I knew the first was a lie based on Spencer's confession. Was it possible she'd lied for him again? Was Spencer suspected at all?
Maybe briefly, but everyone was pretty certain that Bramwell had something to do with her disappearance. Story is, he killed her and threw her into one of the incinerators.
What a horrible rumor. Even if I was pretty sure it wasn't true, it still sent a chill up my spine. Were there cameras?
Yeah. Guess some of the footage is missing from after Jenny left Bramwell's lab. They claim there was some interruption when the footage was stored to the cloud. The sequence of video somehow went missing, and the timestamps were off.
But someone likely tampered with it, you think? I sure didn't know enough about surveillance cameras and cloud storage, but it seemed unusual that such a critical sequence had simply disappeared.
I think so, but what do I know? I'm just a chem major.
Do you think Bramwell had anything to do with her disappearance? He let out a huff and shrugged.
I don't know. I'd like to think not, but his family has such a morbid history. Murder is definitely in his genetics. He had a brother that went missing, too. It's like their whole family is a string of conspiracy theories.
I knew the story behind his brother, and I'd seen the pain in Devrick's eyes when he'd told me about him. It was only out of curiosity that I asked Bryson to see what the student body had conjured about that piece of his past as well. Then you think Bramwell Sr. was also behind the mass suicide?
It's documented in the study that he injected those women with something. Something that messed with their heads. Do I think he drowned them himself? Maybe not. But I do believe he's the reason they're dead.
We finally arrived at the dreaded stretch of woods. A chilling prickle palmed the back of my neck as the two of us walked in the darkness. Different than the feeling I got walking from the subway at night back at home. There, I was one of hundreds walking the street at night. At random. Here, an attack seemed more intimate. Personal. The brief cops opened to the lawn of my dorm. Well, I guess this is where we part ways, huh? I asked, pulling the wallet that held my ID card from my bag.
Yeah. Hey, don't mention to Mel that I told you that stuff about Jenny.
Okay. Can I ask why? He glanced around as if she were anywhere within earshot, and stepping toward me, he lowered his voice.
She's really sensitive about speculation. She and Jenny were close. In her mind, Bramwell did it.
She really has it in for the guy, huh?
I guess. Wasn't always that way, though. There was a time she went on and on about him, like every other student who's smitten with the guy. But then Jenny went missing, and she all of a sudden pulled out the pitchforks. Like I said, it's not as if he doesn't have a history to suspect him, though.
Yeah. Funny how I felt the opposite, that there wasn't enough for me to condemn him. Anyway, I'll let you get to your dorm. Good night.
Night.
I jogged up the staircase and threw back the door to the residential staff checking IDs. I exhaled a sigh as Mel flicked her fingers impatiently for my ID card. Come on, Vespertine. I've got 15 minutes before I can hit the sack. From my wallet, I tugged my card, holding it out for her to scan me in. Midnight lab, huh? She asked, handing it back to me. Yeah, just getting back. You walked? I glanced toward the other staff member scrolling through his phone, seemingly uninterested in our conversation. Bryson walked me home. Surprised it wasn't Spencer, she said bitterly. I've distanced myself from him a bit. You were right. She rolled her eyes. When am I wrong, though? Perhaps I should have been as bold and outspoken about Spencer drugging me, too. My situation was a bit more complicated, though. Inquiries would have led into deep examinations that would have pointed to Professor Bramwell's involvement that night. Having Gilchrist on my back was bad enough. She hadn't said anything more about my test score or cheating off Spencer, so perhaps she'd decided to drop the accusation. Maybe it was as Bramwell had said, not enough evidence to prove it. However, I couldn't help but wonder if I had come forward with the accusation against Spencer, made it public as Mel had, would she have lied for him again? Made me look bad to prove her point that I didn't belong? As I stepped past Mel, she gave a quick tap to the other staff member's shoulder. Hey, I'm going up now. You got the last few minutes?
Yep.
I stepped inside the elevator and she followed after. The moment the doors closed, she turned to me. What's going on with you and Bramwell? As the elevator lurched into motion, she pressed the stop button, halting our ascent. A surge of panic locked my muscles. Elevators had always freaked me out, just the thought of getting stuck in one. But old elevators in particular terrified me. I kept my eyes on that button while she stared at me expectantly. There's nothing going on. Please, I'm not stupid. I've seen you leave his lab at night. Considering the back entrance to the lab was tucked behind Emmerich Hall, she'd have to have been spying on me. Are you following me around or something? Does the thought of that worry you? The bottom line was, she had no proof of anything. Bramwell's lab was like a fortress. So what the hell was I doing, cowering to her, like a frightened schoolgirl anyway? I had grown up with worse than Mel. I'd been approached by those far more dangerous. I reached for the elevator button, and when she grabbed my arm, I threw her off me and shot her a look of warning that must have been pure death, with the way she backed away. Once the elevator lurched into motion, the clamp of anxiety over my lungs loosed itself. What I do is none of your business. I'm only warning you to be careful. It started out as obsession with Jenny and... You... Were you not attracted to him once? The elevator dinged and the door opened to the empty corridor of my floor. When she didn't answer, I stepped out of the carriage and turned to face her. Yes, I found him attractive once. Then I learned that the good professor is actually a monster. Watch yourself, Lilia. The doors closed. I pulled up the picture I'd snapped on my phone of the Kuunachki skull and zoomed in on the sharpened teeth again. Curious, I logged into my Dracadia library account on the laptop and clicked on the Adderley Memorial texts. Scrolling through pages of history on the Kuunachki tribe brought me to a picture of a young girl with long black hair and dark eyes. It had been taken in the early 1900s, about the time when the tribe had been mostly wiped out. Two of her teeth had been replaced with black stones, which was interesting in itself, but when I zoomed in, something else caught my eye. The buttons of the doll clutched in her arm. Frowning, I zoomed closer, noting one of the buttons appeared to be a small, misshapen metal button with an iron cross etched into it. Scrambling out of the chair, I dashed toward the closet and removed the small wooden box that held all of my found trinkets and lifted the small button I'd noticed wedged in the door my first night here. I returned to my desk and studied it against the one I zoomed in on. The same button. Chapter 53. Lilia. The conversation with Bryson consumed my head as I exited the Dragon's Lair, having eaten nothing more than a piece of avocado toast and a latte that I'd charged to Bramwell's card. I spent half the night thinking about the black stones Bryson had mentioned in the birds, and the skull I'd seen in the photograph trying to establish a connection between them. Black to-go cup in hand, I made my way to Bramwell's lecture, if he bothered to lecture today, and felt the pressure of an oncoming storm tickling the back of my neck. Vibrant red, oranges, and yellows colored the trees, as the full breadth of autumn had settled over the campus, and gray clouds hung heavy and thick in a sky that promised rain. The euphony of early morning birds lent a peaceful song to my walk, while an errant breeze stoked the scent of wet leaves. Although the temps remained in the mid-50s, warm for those of us who suffered brutal winters as a general rule, the air cast a chill over my bare legs. The temps were expected to climb up to 60 at some point during the day, so I wasn't too concerned about the outfit I've chosen. But it sure as hell made for a chilly walk. I sipped my overpriced latte to keep warm, looking like every other student hustling to class, the lid of my cup marked with the lipstick I'd made a point to wear. Because I wasn't every other student. I was the one who'd given her professor a blowjob and carried his check for $5,000 in her bag. He wasn't like any professor I'd ever known, either. He was moody, like rainy days and bitter coffee, sensual whispers in dark corners and the slow burn of fine whiskey. A torment I both hated and welcomed at the same time. Aside from a couple of early birds, the auditorium was mostly empty and I hustled to my seat. A completely foreign face strode up to the lectern where he unpacked books and papers, and my heart sank as he introduced himself as the assistant professor. In other words, Professor Bramwell had either forgotten about our meeting or had blown it off. Deflated and bored, I took notes while Professor Humdrum gave a bland account of Noctisoma's life cycle, a topic we'd already witnessed firsthand in the lab. It was only when he mentioned that some seagulls and ravens managed to avoid infection despite their fondness for consuming noxberries and Summonix moths that I perked up. I raised my hand, and when he acknowledged me, I asked, "What about bats?"
"Bats, unfortunately, are not immune. When they feed on an infected Salmonix moth, they succumb rather quickly to infection and are often found floating in bodies of water."
"They don't have gastroliths, correct?" He looked thoughtful for a moment.
"To my knowledge, no."
"Why do only some seagulls and ravens avoid infection?"
"Well, that would be a question for Dr. Bramwell, I'm afraid."
"Of course it would." With a nod, I settled back into my chair. My head puzzled the pieces I'd been given as the professor kept on with his lecture. Bats succumbed. Some seagulls and ravens did not. The latter used gastroliths to digest food. The question was, of the birds who became infected, how many had black stone gastroliths? I wished Professor Bramwell was there to answer and tame the curiosity swirling in my head. Spencer sat two rows behind me, and each time I felt a burning gaze at the back of my head, I'd turn to see him staring at me. Trying to ignore him, I slogged through the rest of the lecture, grateful when it was finally time to pack up. It was then that Professor Bramwell entered the class with that arrogant and dominant gait that made a girl's ovaries ache. The sight of him stirred a flurry in my chest, like dried fallen leaves in a wind tunnel. He took a moment to shake the assistant professor's hand, and when his gaze landed on me, I nearly stopped breathing. Why the hell did he have to look so good in his dark jeans and white button-down, standing next to Mr. Khaki Pants and Pullover, as if he was trying to torment me? One of the other girls in class sauntered up to him as if to ask a question. I watched as he gave her no more than a minute of his attention before directing her to the assistant beside him. I could almost feel the disappointment radiating from her. As I slung my bag over my shoulder and made my way down to the front of the auditorium, his gaze caught mine, and he jerked his head for me to follow. Not waiting for me to catch up, he strode from the room. I hustled after him, and when I exited the class, I sighted him striding toward the corner at the opposite end of the hallway.
"Hey,"
Spencer said from behind.
"Can I talk to you for a sec?"
"Hey, sorry. I gotta run." He reached out and gripped my wrist.
"Please?"
It was only the look of pleading in his eyes that made me pause at all. "What?" An air of annoyance thickened my tone. When he didn't answer, I jerked in his grasp. "Spencer, I don't have time for this," I said, my impatience blossoming to full-on irritation. Instead of answering, he dragged me to a small alcove in the hallway and I twisted my arm to get loose. "Spencer!" Once out of the main corridor, he pushed me into the wall behind me.
"My mother told me something,"
he whispered, his throat bobbing with a swallow, voice shaky.
"Lippincott isn't my father."
I froze, frowning as I peered up at him. "What?"
"He's not my real father."
Words failed to come to mind. I didn't know what to say to him, how to respond without sounding like an idiot, and the seconds ticked before Bramwell would become impatient and forego our meeting. "I'm so sorry, Spencer. I don't know what to say."
"I'm not sorry. I'm elated. Fucking elated."
Through tears, he chuckled, the contrast of his emotions unsettling, as if he might snap at any moment. Then, I guess I'm happy for you? His face softened.
I knew you'd be.
Before I knew what hit me, he took my face in his palms and pressed his lips to mine. My spine snapped to attention, muscles stiff with the shock that sputtered up my throat, clamping off the air. As I let out a muffled protest, he broke the kiss, his chest heaving, tears breaking over his cheeks.
Please, I'm begging you. Meet me tonight, the courtyard outside of the commons.
At the shake of my head, he leaned in, as if to kiss me again, and I pressed a hand to his chest to stop him. Don't. The aggrieved expression on his face might have earned a small bit of sympathy from me if he hadn't so boldly trampled my boundaries.
I'm sorry,
he said.
I shouldn't have done that.
What might have been a genuine apology hardly carried over the warring thoughts in my head as I tried to wrap my mind around what the hell had just happened. Stepping to the side offered just enough distance to regain some of my lost composure. Spencer, I told you from the beginning it's not like that. I'm not... I can't.
Lillian.
I have to go. Head pounding in calamity, I jogged down the hallway toward where I'd seen Bramwell go. Rounding the corner brought me to another hallway, but he was nowhere in sight. Shit, I muttered, peering into a packed lecture hall. The next was a small auditorium, but equally packed. The next two rooms at the opposite side of the hall were the same. It wasn't until I reached the last room, which opened on an empty auditorium, that I found him leaning against the wall at the front of the room, with his arms crossed. Mouth suddenly dried, I swallowed a gulp as I approached, my head still swimming with what had happened with Spencer. Wouldn't it have been easier to meet down in your lab?
Easier for you, perhaps.
His gaze cruised over me, lingering on my legs for a moment before he lifted it to mine.
For me? No.
Still reeling from the unwelcomed kiss, I reached into my bag and pulled out the uncashed check, slightly humiliated when it shook like a leaf from my outstretched hand. I can't accept this. Nothing more than a quick glance at it.
You want to so badly, you're probably tearing yourself apart right now.
Unable to look him in the eye, I shook my head. It's too much, Deverick. He pushed off the wall, not bothering to uncross his arms.
Cash the fucking check.
The sharp tone in his voice swung my attention to the equally annoyed expression on his face. Why? So you can look at me with pity? Call me pathetic?
Why do you have to be so goddamn stubborn? You need the money. I'll be just fine without it.
I silently tried to wrap my head around the thought that what would save me right then was nothing for him. A pittance. Lowering my arm, I stared down at it, telling myself that I shouldn't take it. Working for you wasn't about the money, you know. Clearing my throat, I blinked away the mist in my eyes, a cataclysm of emotions hammering my brain. I'll pay you back.
You won't. You can't.
Then tell me how I can repay you. I folded the check in half, wondering what he'd do right then if I tore it to pieces in front of him. I can't just accept this. It isn't right.
Neither is intentionally letting yourself sink in quicksand. Focus on yourself for once, and eliminate the roadblocks that stand in your way.
I sighed at that. You were never a roadblock.
Only because we weren't caught.
I hated that he could hold himself so composed while I felt like my insides were being crushed by a wrecking ball. The utter chaos of wanting to wrap my arms around him for having single-handedly eliminated months of stress and worry, while at the same time wanting to tear at him the way his indifference tore at me. Why are you doing this to me?
What am I doing?
Was it not written across my face? Had I hidden the ache that well? I tucked the check into my bag, because if nothing else, it just felt too heavy in my hands right then. You push and you pull, and I feel like I'm being torn apart. His dark chuckle echoed through the room, and I looked up, scowling at the audacity of him laughing at me while I felt at my most vulnerable.
You think you're the only one?
His jaw hardened, lip curled in disgust.
There isn't a sharp enough blade to carve you out of my head, Lillia. I'd have to tear out my own goddamn eyeballs to keep from noticing your every move. Who you talk to, who you fucking kiss.
The breath shot out of me at the realization that he'd seen what had happened with Spencer. Oh, God. How that must have looked. I opened my mouth to offer an explanation, but the resentment sketched in his expression told me it didn't matter. At the same time, a twisted part of me enjoyed that I could hurt him that way. That something poked at his emotions when it seemed like he'd been trying to forget what had happened between us. We're just professor and student. Just like before. I forced the same aloof tone that he'd fed me. Isn't that what you wanted?
We're more than that. And you know it.
The tight clench of his teeth almost made me think he was insulted by what I'd said. I don't, actually. Rubbing the back of his neck, he looked away.
For the love of Christ, stop biting your lip.
It was only then I realized I'd been gnawing the hell out of my bottom lip as I swept my tongue over a slight sting there.
These little things you do that mess with my hand.
Hand raking through his hair, he paced.
There's a violence in my blood. This rage that twists in my gut, and it makes me sick. I'm fucking sick when it comes to you. That I could even fathom breaking his neck.
He paused his pacing, eyes lost to whatever images spun through his head, like he could vividly see himself in them.
I can't control it,
he said, curling his hands to tight fists.
I can't reel it in because I still feel you. I still smell that nauseating sweet scent on your skin that drives me fucking crazy. That sickening shade of lipstick that takes me back to that night. I'm losing my mind.
His voice thundered around me, shaking every nerve in my body to life as I watched him unravel. There was a beauty in it. The vulnerability I longed to see in him, the visible distress creeping over him, was unfitting for a man so otherwise collected and detached. He was coming apart at the seams. Finally, a dent in the armor he wore like a second skin. What I'd mistaken as indifference wasn't that at all. He ached and burned as much as I did. I wanted to watch him come completely undone, to turn reckless just like me, to grab me by the throat and tear away this resistance between us. Why are you fighting it?
You know damn well.
He stepped closer, backing me against the wall.
I'm not one of your goddamn classmates, Lilia. I'm your professor. Your future would be destroyed. You'd be kicked out and sent home to whatever life you were living, and I'd be here, hating the fact that I fucked you up. That I took everything from you.
That's only if we get caught, I whispered. Every emotion seemed to flash across his face, like a battle waged inside his head. He lifted his hand, brushing only his finger across my cheek as his tongue swept across his lips.
The things I want to do to you.
Wincing, he looked away, and as he recoiled, I snatched up his hand. A look of torment claimed his expression as I dragged his palm across my cheek. Eyes closed, I focused on the texture of his skin, the sensation taking me back to that night. I kissed his palm, drawing it across my lips and latched onto his finger. Gaze locked on his, I sucked it into my mouth, moving up and down the length of it, just as I had done to his cock in the shower. A trail of lipstick marking the path. Jaw slack, he watched me with heavily hooded eyes.
Lilia.
His grip hardened around my face, the veins in his neck popping as he snarled back at me.
You want to know how you can repay me?
The grit in his voice sharpened his tone.
Stop making me think of fucking you every hour of the day so I can get back to my work.
Exasperated, I gnashed my teeth. If that's what you want, then okay, I'll stop. I didn't even wait for his reaction as I stepped past him for the door. A hard grip of my nape was the only warning before my body spun back around and he slammed his lips to mine in a kiss that was neither gentle nor calm. One hand fisted my hair, the other took hold of my jaw. He kissed me ruthlessly, plundered angrily, and he groaned and bit my lip, digging his fingers into my flesh with